talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
After a very eventful weekend for the crew here, it is Monday morning, 9:02, a very busy 9 o'clock hour here. We got Darren Haynes coming up in a matter of moments. The Toronto Blue Jays spring training continues. Still a lot of good signs in the number 5 spot in the rotation, the battle for that one. So we'll get to that in the Blue Jays report at 9:25. And coming up in about 40 minutes, the coach of the championship-winning hockey team that resides in Calgary, the Inferno, winning the Clarkson Cup last night. The man who headmanned that is Scott Reed. He'll be coming on again in about 40 minutes. But pleased to be joined right now by the man who is the author, proprietor, the guy who came up with flamesfrom80feet.ca. It is Darren Haynes. Darren, how are you this morning?
Not bad, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. A lot better than the two other guys who normally occupy this room are feeling today.
No, I was just gonna say I heard Boom this morning. Sounded a little it's Saturday night too. This is like we're way past. What, 36 hours after?
Yeah. One thing I'm noticing, just spending some time with these fine folks, is that recovery time becomes a bit of an issue the longer in the tooth you get. So not quite the same for me. I kind of had to step up a little bit and failed miserably, but going to try to pick it up here in the 9 o'clock. The Flames played Arizona on Friday, which after the weekend seems like it was months ago, but it did happen. It was only a couple days. The Flames fall 4-1. In that game, we're at the point where we're looking for little things. The result is whatever. The first one that I think a lot of people were going to be paying attention to, Kenny Agostino making his way to the big club, playing beside Backlund and Frolik. What did you take away from his performance?
Well, I think it was fine. Didn't stand out either in a positive or a negative way for me. I actually talked to him post-game just to see how he thought it went. He said it took a while to kind of find his way in the first period. He thought he was better in the last two periods. And certainly at that time, he said, he looks forward to playing Monday night. And I kept thinking, well, we'll see if you play Monday night. But it does sound like Sam Bennett is going to be out for a bit longer here. So he'll get another crack at it, presumably on that same line. And two pretty good guys to be teamed with. So another chance to see him. And you can expect him to be probably a little more noticeable. That's generally how it happens. You get that first game just to get your feet wet, and it takes a little bit of time to get into it, and we'll see what he brings tonight.
Yeah, it seems like, because when Garner Hathaway came in, it was immediate impact. He was crashing into everyone, getting into Zdeno Chara's face. But when that's not your style, it maybe feels like the adrenaline of an NHL debut can almost be a bit of a kind of get in the way of someone who isn't just a run into everyone and actually plays with a bit more skill and finesse and that type of thing.
Yeah, no, exactly right. For Kenny Agostino, that's just not his game. So, what his game is going to be is about kind of gelling with his teammates and line mates and be able to create a little offense. I mean, he was the leading scorer in Stockton when he got recalled. So, and that's chemistry isn't going to happen overnight. I mean, he just kind of got here, like he's barely had a chance to practice with them. So it's the NHL game that's hockey at its highest level, at its fastest level. You need to know where your guys are going to be. You know their trends, and that's why chemistry is so important. And so it's going to be a bit. And if we're expecting him to, pick up 2 or 3 points tonight, that would be also a bit of, high expectations. Like, it's going to take him a little bit of time. So I guess what you're looking for, because he may not have the luxury of time, is just to, when he does get a chance, just to direct some pucks on net. And let's just see, he's got a pretty good shot, and he's pretty big guy. He can get in on the forecheck, and so we'll look for little things in his game and see where he's at.
Another player who got a bit of an extended look because of injury is Jakub Nekladl. He playing with Derek England. He's looked all right in the last little bit. What have you seen from him?
Yeah, I think he's been fine. I think from what I've seen, still a little bit of works maybe defensively, and I think it's for him it's a different game. He's still adapting. Like, he'd never played in North America until this year. So when you take away size of ice and you kind of compress things, you have to adjust your game as a defenseman and the way your stick positioning is, and just everything's happening faster. People are on top of you more. And so I think that's still an adjustment. And so he was adjusting to that, the new dimensions in the American Hockey League. But of course, when you move one step further and you go up to the NHL, then everything's a little bit quicker. The plays are a little bit more skilled, and you got to be that much better with your stick positioning and that sort of thing. So I think that's going to be an adjustment for him. But I've liked what he brings. I really like him in the offensive end. I think he's a nice presence on the blue line. We've had a chance to see. He's got a cannon of a shot. We haven't seen it a whole lot yet, but I'd like to see him continue to get power play time, because I think that's a niche for him. And for what he provides, I mean, he to me is the ideal guy you want to have on that third pairing.
Yeah, he's someone who, like, it's obviously not the biggest decision that has to be made this offseason, but he is unrestricted at the end of the year. If he's coming in at around the same cap that he is now, I wouldn't mind giving him another look next year.
Yeah, no, I think they'll be open to that. I mean, there's some interesting situation. Like, body-wise on the blue line, if you look at where they're at with the big three, with Giordano, Brody, and Hamilton, now with Joki Paakka, so there's four. Now, your other three guys that have kind of been down in the depth chart in terms of pairings but making a bunch of money is Weidman, Engelund, and Smead. So all of a sudden, you're at seven. Right there. Those are going to be all seven one-way guys, all have contracts for next season. So this summer is going to probably, how this summer develops, and if Calgary is able to maybe move one of those latter bodies that I just mentioned, that's what could create some opportunity for a Jakub McLeodl or a Tyler Weatherspoon. And I think they'd be anxious to create those openings because they've looked very good in their time here.
Well, and that's why I don't think there's any need to rush TJ Brody back from whatever it is that is ailing him, because you got McLeodl getting a few more minutes and Joki Paakka all of a sudden is up on playing top 4 minutes. And I think he's looked pretty good in that role too.
Yeah, I like him. He's got a nice physical presence to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, we haven't, I mean, for Finns in this city, who do we have for defense? And you're thinking guys like Tony Ludman and stuff like that. But Joki Paakka, he's got his size and he's not afraid to use it. And so from what I've seen so far and what's going to be an adjustment phase for him, I've been impressed.
And he was paired up with Dennis Weidman playing his first game in forever. It was a very, very weird situation that seemed to get weirder as it went on. What did you see from Weidman in his first game in the Flames uniform in over a month?
Well, I saw him get burned on one of the key goals, unfortunately for him. Just kind of, lost his man coming out of the corner, Vermette, I believe it was, and mm-hmm. And just left him open on the back door for a key goal. So then that's going to happen. You haven't played at game speed for 6 weeks for Weidman. So that's going to happen. But you know, we'll see him the rest of the way. He's sat out that long. Now it's time to get him back in the lineup. And that's part of the reason why Tyler Weatherspoon isn't here any longer, which is unfortunate. Based on the way he played, there just isn't an opening right now. And so you might as well have him playing in the A until there is an opening.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, you, when I saw that, I was like, oh, I know they had to, but I was kind of hoping they'd use one of the actual call-ups that they had on him. But then you start thinking, where's this guy fit into everything in here? And right now it's just not a lot of room because some of the guys you kind of have to play.
Yeah, so he goes down with his chin up and is should be very, very happy with the way it went, and should be, if his confidence was ever not there, and, you know, whether he said so or not, you'd have to wonder that if it wasn't, waning a little bit given the way it went last year. He barely played and so many trips up, but then just watching, and so you'd think his confidence has been maybe reinvigorated a little bit, and if he doesn't get another look this year, which is possible, you'd like to think that he comes into camp assertive and ready to kind of take a job that should be his, assuming there is some sort of opening on the blue line by next September.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the interesting stories to watch in training camp next year is the blue line. And, I mean, in the offseason, too, there are moves that could be made with Wyman or Englund or Ladislav Schmid. Right now on flamesfrom80feet.ca, you have the 8 random thoughts on the current happenings with the Flames. The very first one is one that's been talked about a lot on this station and in other places. Michael Backlund's playing, like, pretty well.
Yeah, he is. He's, And there are, you know, there are legions of Michael Backlund supporters in this city. For those that look beyond the score sheet, and so Michael Backlund has always had advanced stats that have been very good, and sometimes those aren't as acknowledged or recognized by people because they're not the conventional conversation. So now he's starting to get noticed a lot more by everybody because he's doing what does get noticed, and that's contributing offense. He's scoring a lot. He's got some good chemistry, like you said, going on with Michael Frolik right now, and it's good on him. I thought last year, I actually expected a little bit more from Michael Backlund last year after what I thought he really turned the corner 2 years ago. So it's good to see him where he's at right now, and he's really showing that. Hey, I've got an offensive side that maybe you guys didn't think was there or as strong, but it is something, and I don't want to be labeled and pigeonholed as a third line defensive center because that's kind of how it's gone. And if you've ever had the chance to talk to him about that, and I have, he almost takes offense by that line of questioning that he's better as a third line defensive center. He sees himself as an offensive contributor. So it's good to see him actually, contributing and being on the score sheet and getting some big goals.
And I understand that. And he has been very good, but isn't his role with this team kind of already made out as at best a third line two-way center now? Cause you got Bennett and Monahan. Those guys aren't really going anywhere. He's outplaying his role, but he hasn't outplayed it to the point where he moves up into another role, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But is he a center in front of Sam Bennett right now? Not yet. Is Sam Bennett ahead of him on the depth chart?
No,
you know what I mean? And so could Michael Backlund be ahead of 20-year-old Sam Bennett on the depth chart in terms of a 1-2-3 at center next year? I don't see why not. And if Backlund continues to play as he's showing and he says, you know what, I'm 27 years old, which he'll be on Thursday, by the way, I'm a legit number two. Does that start up the conversation? Well, maybe Sam Bennett goes back on the wing because this team is still looking for wings. So, I mean, anything can happen. Michael Backlund, this is his opportunity to kind of make some hay and to make a case that he is a top six guy, not a third line guy.
And certainly now that Chris Russell is no longer in the picture here in Calgary, he has, I think Backlund has kind of turned into the hill that the stats people and the non-stats people are going to die on. That seems to be the debate now, where before it was Russell and shot blocking, now it's Backlund and how much of an impact does he have. But you're right, for the non-sport or non-analytic people, he's putting up the stats now that they actually believe in, with goals and all of that, you know?
Yeah, I think the appreciation of Michael Backlund is growing in kind of the conventional community, if you will.
Yes,
well.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Tonight, the Flames taking on the St. Louis Blues. I'm kind of at the point where, A, I'm looking, okay, what's Agostino do? What does Garnet Hathaway do? How does Yanni Ortio look in that? And instead of, boy, hope the Flames get a win tonight. And then also looking at what the other team can bring, and there's a lot to like with the St. Louis Blues club. What are you looking for on their side tonight?
Well, the Blues, I'm almost at the point where I judge the Blues on what happens in mid-April and early May, not what happens in March. I mean, they have this tendency to look really good. This is the year, take the Blues, and they seem to, and that's a reputation Ken Hitchcock has, is he gets a lot out of his teams. He can kind of maximize them. They're a very good regular season team, but they sometimes have a knack for not being able to find that next gear when it comes to the postseason. So the Blues come in here red hot, and I'm prepared to leave the building tonight convinced that the Blues are the team to beat in the Central, and I've thought that before in previous years. So I'm not sure how else I can see it, but I like to watch Vladimir Tarasenko play. Mm-hmm. Like, what a player, what a package. So, you know, there's lots of reasons to watch the Blues. I'm interested to see Jake Allen. Where that's of interest to people in Calgary is this guy as good as it sounds like he's played? And in which case, you know, that might be his backup. Brian Elliott might become someone that's in the Flames goaltending conversation this summer. So there's lots of reasons to watch the Blues. And with them red hot, this is a great test for Yoni Ordeo. These are the kind of games that I want to see Ordeo and see how he does. Against very good teams that are going to put a lot of dangerous chances on them tonight. Especially if Brody's missing, this is obviously a team in St. Louis that is, you know, considerably better than what Calgary is right now. So how does Yoni Ordeo stand up to what will be probably a lot of pressure? And we're going to learn a lot about Yoni Ordeo, I think, over this final month, if he gets to start against St. Louis and against the Kings and the Ducks and the Blackhawks and those kind of starts.
Yeah, the Blues are a team that you kind of think of as, okay, we know they're good. We don't need to pay a ton of attention to them. They're going to be top three in their division and play in the first round of the playoffs, and that's when we can start focusing on them. And you get so far into that mindset that you forget there's a pretty damn good team over there right now. Like, Robbie Fabry has 16 goals. They have Tarasenko, who's obviously very good, but Troy Brouwer is going to hit 15. David Backes is at 17. I think we almost forget how good this team actually is because we're, okay, show us in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that's the thing with St. Louis is when, you know, historically they've had depth and they've had this amazing depth, and that's what always got me is how come they're not more successful in the playoffs, because they from a top line to a fourth line were so deep that it seems like they should be, you know, a team that when it comes to shutting down a top line, no problem. We got a second line. You want to shut down our top two lines? No problem. We got a dangerous third line. They had that depth, but for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to get over that hurdle and that hump of being successful and getting out of that kind of first round of the playoffs and moving on. So, yeah, very interesting. Lots of guys obviously heading for potential free agency this summer. So this is a you might be the next version of the St. Louis Blues that we see at the Saddledome, next December, whenever that's going to be, could be considerably different, kind of depending on how this season plays out for them.
Yeah, no, this kind of feels like a you-know-what or get-off-the-pot type of year for the St. Louis Blues with Backes and Shattenkirk, I believe, both set to become unrestricted free agents. Darren, with everything that's going on with the Flames or not going on with the Flames, we have to look at a few other different storylines to help us get through the rest of the year. What can we expect from Flames from 80 feet in the next week?
Good question. Just kind of being reactive, I guess. We'll see. Again, it's a busy week with the Flames here, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So we tied up doing game stuff. But in between time, you know, it's pretty soon start looking at the draft a little bit more and how is that developing? And it would be interesting. Are these guys going to be, you know, right now they're looking like they could be in that kind of 27-28 hole by the time the season is over. So what does that mean? That could be picking eighth from anywhere from like first to seventh or eighth if they end up, or seventh, I guess, if you end up fourth from the bottom. So, you know, starting to look at that a little bit. What are the better fits? What happens? I like the idea of a concept of, so what happens if the Flames do win the lottery and Austin Matthews? What does that mean for a guy like Michael Backlund? What does that mean for Sam Bennett? Do they move Bennett to the wing? What are the ramifications of that? So there's lots of kind of fun, futuristic looking stuff we can get into. So we'll see what happens and what unfolds and if other storylines come along. If not, there's other draft focus stuff that I'll get into.
Yeah, the season hasn't gone the way that a lot of people thought it would for the Flames, but it certainly leaves us a lot to talk about. Darren, thanks for doing this, and enjoy the game tonight.
All right, sounds good.
That is Darren Haynes. The website, flamesfrom80feet.ca. A lot of real good nuggets there on the Calgary Flames, and there's a lot to look for in the next few weeks as the season winds down, and then we head toward the draft lottery. With that in mind, we'll do the draft lottery simulator coming up in a little bit. When we come back, the Blue Jays report. Aaron Sanchez looked very good again. Jose Bautista hit a ball really far. We'll talk about it when we come back here on Pinder in the Morning Without Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is 9:26, still to come in the next half hour now. We will have a championship-winning coach joining us as the bench boss for the Calgary Inferno, Scott Reed, hopping on to talk about their win in the Clarkson Cup. Taking on a team that had only lost three times all season. It's fine, just drop eight on them in the championship game. No big deal. Calgary Inferno head coach Scott Reed coming up at 9:45. But now it is time for the Blue Jay Report.
Sportsnet 960, the Blue Jay spring training continues. This is the latest from Florida with Peter Klein. Sportsnet 960, Calgary.
The Blue Jay spring training report brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Spring Into Audi sales event is on. Get rates starting at 0.9% and credit up to $9,750 on select models. Offer valid until March 31st.
Nailed it. The Blue Jays.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got it. See? Once in a while, I can almost be a professional broadcaster. The Blue Jays picking up a 6-1 win over the Tampa Bay Rays yesterday. The results don't matter as much, but it was the performance of Aaron Sanchez that has really brought out a lot of the discussion. The first time he actually got a start in the spring, and he goes 4 innings, no runs, 4 strikeouts, just 1 walk and 1 hit. He looked very good. His competition, Gavin Floyd, also pitching in that game, not making for an easy decision for John Gibbons in the number 5 spot in the rotation.
But yeah, I mean, he was tremendous. I think he only lost, struggled with really one guy where he walked out 4 straight pitches and then he bounced back. So yeah, I mean, he was good. Floyd was good. They all did a nice job. It was really so tough. They've all been having good springs right now.
Yeah, it's not. There isn't really a clear-cut favorite in this thing right now. There's someone who I very clearly want to be the number 5 starter for the Toronto Blue Jays, but Gavin Floyd's not going away. Jesse Chavez gets the ball for the Jays today when they play Baltimore at 11. He's not really going away. Drew Hutchison has been all right this spring. He's not really fading either. I still feel like this is Aaron Sanchez's job to lose, but I don't feel like the Blue Jays really have that mentality. Just hearing all the clips and everything like that, it really does sound like this is a legitimate competition between all of these guys, and they don't really have a real good idea about where this is going to go with that number 5 spot. Again, I still want it to be Aaron Sanchez, but Gavin Floyd's making a case. Jesse Chavez making a case. So this one, I think, is going to come right down to the wire. There is a little bit that you can do with it, with the schedule the Jays have. They play the 4-game set against the Rays, have a day off, 3 games against Boston, I believe. And then they have a day off. So you don't really need that number 5 starter for a while. I would imagine that if it is Sanchez, they will try to make that work anyway. And with the back issues that Estrada has, maybe this buys him some time now. But really interested to see what they do with that 5th spot, because it's not really a necessity until the middle of April. Also with the game yesterday, Jose Bautista gets his first hit of the spring. It's a home run. I don't think we're overly concerned that Bautista only has one hit at this point in the spring. With him, like, he's not someone who, he's only batting 250 in the spring. Well, what's going to happen this year? You know, he's probably working on a few different things. He was taking BP left-handed, for crying out loud. He's going to be fine, but the power's still there. And now there's talk, could he get a Cespedes-like deal? 3 years, $75 million? That is a deal that I would do for Bautista in a heartbeat. Would Bautista do it for Bautista? I still don't know. I think that is kind of eventually where he gets around, but I'm imagining if it's for 3 years, there's going to be a team out there that's going to go 3 at 90. And would the Blue Jays go that high? That's kind of where I would be at right now. That this whole 5 for $150 is insanity to me. That there's no way I want to pay someone that much money when he's in his 40 and 41 year seasons. 3 at 30 per year is kind of where I'm at this point. That's where I feel like this thing's going to get done. Maybe a couple team options in there as well. Maybe that sweetens the deal for Joey Bats a little bit, but the 5 at 150 is not going to happen. Sounds like he's more willing to negotiate now, kind of got off that hard stance that he had earlier in the spring. My gut still says that I don't think he's coming back with the Blue Jays next year. Just the amount of money that he's going to be asking, the amount of money that will be available. Power is tough to find now. We've kind of entered that era where there aren't as we get spoiled with it with the Blue Jays, so we don't see it as much. But around baseball, there isn't as much power anymore as there used to be. You can make your guesses as to why. But the guys like Bautista, guys like Encarnacion, who can consistently hit 30 home runs, and Bautista's average has been better. These guys come at a premium, and I think there's going to be a major bidding war for them in the offseason. But Bautista right now for the Jays, off to a good start with the first home run of the spring as Toronto beat the Tampa Bay Rays yesterday 6-1. Today, it is Jesse Chavez getting the ball to start the starters. We saw it yesterday with Sanchez. He gets stretched out a little bit more. It's up to four innings. Chavez will probably get around that as well. First time he's getting the official start this spring. So another one that every game that the Blue Jays send out, at the Blue Jays play, there's a couple pitchers you want to keep an eye on. The battle for the fourth outfielder spot, still going to be an intriguing one. How they handle the bullpen. Randy Choate brought in on a contract. There's a lot to pay attention to with this Blue Jays club right now as this spring rolls on. Someone asking, how about a sign and trade for Bautista? I don't think that's going to happen. That's traditionally not something that happens in baseball. I don't recall many of those happening, and there isn't really an advantage to it because in hockey and in basketball, where you see a lot of these happen, there's an advantage because the team that has his rights at the time can sign him for an extended contract. The Flames can sign Gaudreau to an 8-year deal when everyone else can sign him at 7. There isn't that in baseball. It's the Wild West when it comes to contracts in baseball. So there's no advantage. If a team wants to do a sign and trade with the Blue Jays, that's just them doing a gigantic favor for Toronto, because the Blue Jays don't have any leverage when it comes to that sort of thing. If the Cardinals want to do a sign and trade for Bautista, they'll just sign Bautista. Would you do a Bautista deal at 4 years and $110 million? Yeah. I wouldn't feel great about it, but I think that's one that I can kind of settle on. That's $27.5 million a year. For 4 years, he'll be 40. The last year, that contract might be a bit tough, but I would probably do that. I would be okay with that one, yeah. So again, a lot of storylines for the Blue Jays, and we will cover it each and every day in the Blue Jays report here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. So we will go from the Blue Jays talk now to some NHL, where it is once again time for us to do the draft lottery simulator. I feel like we had an okay week last week. There was a lot of not Edmonton winning, which is a win for society. So today over at futureconsiderations.ca, we're starting the lottery. We're off to a not bad start. Liking this one. Oh, this is a good one. We got a good one here today. In at number 3, the New Jersey Devils. Making a rare appearance in this. Don't mind that. In at number 2, your Calgary Flames. I'll take 2. I'm fine with number 2. And I'm much more fine with it because in at number 1, the Buffalo Sabres. Yeah, take that one. Again, there's only a couple teams that you don't want to see. There's really only one team. We don't want Edmonton. We don't want Edmonton winning this thing. And with the way this lottery played out, the Edmonton Oilers picking 6th. They would get Alex Nylander in this scenario. So it's Matthews 1 to Buffalo. Patrick Laine, number 2 to the Flames. Number 3, Jesse Puljujärvi goes to the New Jersey Devils. In at 4, Jacob Chychrun to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And 5, Matthew Tkachuk to Winnipeg. Man, there's a lot of Canadian teams that suck. Number 6, Alex Nylander. 7, Clayton Keller goes to Columbus. And number 8, Pierre-Luc Dubois going to the Vancouver Canucks.
That's like almost the ideal one.
Yeah.
Couple teams you don't hate with 1 and 3.
Yeah, you don't mind that.
Jersey be a surprise. You don't mind seeing them get something.
Yeah.
Calgary number 2.
Yeah, I like this one. If this is how it played out, I would be okay with that. Edmonton down at 6, they get a pretty good player, but not a game changer or anything like that. Vancouver down at 8 looks pretty right now. I'm really digging that one.
Why don't you screenshot that, send that to Bettman, and say, yeah, okay, this is how we have to.
Yeah, don't worry, guys. Don't worry about the TV thing or whatever. Like, you can pretend to play it up with, like, loaded lottery balls or whatever.
No, here's the order.
Yeah, this is what we're going to do. when the draft lottery happens at the end of the regular season. Also, at the Rhett Warner roast on Saturday, first of all, some people knew who I was, which was absolutely mind-boggling.
That's the weirdest, eh?
Yeah,
I don't like it.
The thing that was concerning was that I had a couple people come up and said, oh yeah, I heard you laugh and knew who you were. Damn it!
Nice.
But I had a couple people come up and say, hey, love the draft lottery simulator. Keeps me intrigued every day. Just a man of the people.
It's so awkward being a nobody and someone's like, oh, yeah. It's you. What?
Yeah. Oh, hey, yeah, listen, every day. I was down at the 960 table and there was me and Wills and Steinberg and Will and Kerr. And then there was a few sponsor people there too. It's like, oh my God, they're going to want nothing to do with me. I'm going to be sitting here awkwardly and talking my ear off the whole time. Oh yeah. I love you on the show doing this, that, and the other thing. It was like, wow, I don't know how to handle this even a little bit. People in my hometown don't even know who I am.
Your parents barely recognize you.
Yeah. Showed up at the house one day. The dog was going to attack me. He didn't know who I was. Mom was going to let him. The people there, I mean, Boomer says it all the time, but listeners for the show are really impressive.
They're very nice, too.
Oh, yeah. Like
good dudes.
I take a bit of a beating on the text line every now and then, and rightfully so. But,
me too.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I'm very much rightfully so there, too. But the guys who we met last night or on Saturday night, everyone was super nice. And once again, that was a hell of a time on Saturday night. Like, joking about Rhett losing his suit, which isn't a joke. He has no idea where
not a joke.
No, that's
Foreman's is going to be pissed.
This is not a radio bit. Like, they're retweeting us and stuff like that. This is not a bit. He doesn't have a damn clue.
No idea where that went.
But everyone who was there on Saturday night, it was a blast. Don't like to give him a lot of credit because, like, he very humble person and doesn't like this type of stuff. But I think Boomer nailed that thing. Like, he killed it off the start. And I think he kind of loosened everyone up with a few of the jokes that he made on Saturday night. It was an absolute blast to everyone who was there and everyone who supported it. You all were great. Thank you so much for that. For the people who couldn't come, I'm sorry. We love you anyway. It was just, you could not have fit another human being into that building. It was jam-packed
in
there.
Yeah, sardines.
Yeah.
To make room for the two guys who won seats.
Yeah, no, they were actually doing chin-ups off of the things that were holding, like, the roof together. They had to stay up there the whole time. It was that packed. It was an absolutely fun night. For everyone who was there, thank you so much. Time for us to take a break. When we come back, it was a fun weekend for the Calgary Inferno as well, as they are your Canadian Women's Hockey League champions. We will talk to the coach of that team coming up next year on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
15 minutes away from the top of the hour when Jim Rome takes over on this Calgary Flames game day. Rogers Calgary Flames hockey tonight. Warm up at 6. Puck drop is at 7 o'clock. I am legitimately concerned that we're going to have to leave at some point because there is a fire like two blocks from here and buildings are being evacuated. There's emergency crews rushing all around. So hopefully everyone is okay. And it's slightly terrifying here right now. But it was quite the weekend for the Calgary Inferno. They are your Canadian Women's Hockey League champions, winning the Clarkson Cup, beating Montreal 8-3. The man who is the coach of the Calgary Inferno, Scott Reed, joining us now. Scott, thank you for joining us and congratulations.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. You guys were, I don't think it was any secret, heavy underdogs going into the game. Montreal had lost only three times all season long, twice to you guys, but they had also beat you four times. What clicked in this championship game for you guys that didn't for Montreal?
You know, I felt right from the get-go, you know, we didn't have our full roster going into the year against them. And, you know, all of a sudden you get into a one game with your full roster when they hadn't really seen us yet. It kind of caught them off guard. They really weren't prepared that well for that that challenge we were about to give them. You know, and when you look at it, you know, yes, they have, you know, the goaltender of the year. Well, so do we. You know, yes, they have a couple of good scores, but so do we. We have, you know, the leading goal scorer and MVP from last year. We have a player that's been the world's best player for two decades. You know, plus our depth and our defense were just as good, if not better. So we matched up well, just our records weren't as close as they were, so.
Yeah, going into a championship game, you mentioned the experience. Haley Wickenheiser on this team, a lot of players on your team that have been in very big games before. How important was having that type of leadership on this team?
Well, absolutely. It helps for sure. It's a huge key. You know, we have two players I know for sure, there could be more, that have won at every level now, whether it's, you know, college, worlds, Olympics, you know, with Megan Mickelson and Haley Wickenheiser now have had almost, you know, the trifecta of gold medals.
Yeah, there's a lot of winning that happens on that team. You mentioned before, you didn't have the full roster there when you played Montreal earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a tough balance to walk when you're a coach of, because you play Montreal six times, there aren't a ton of surprises. Is it a tough balance to kind of walk where you kind of want to show them something new, but you don't want to deviate too far away from the actual game plan that got you there?
Well, exactly. You know, you can't deviate. Like you said, you got to stick to what makes you successful. And the biggest thing we stressed to the girls was, you know, there's going to be momentum swings throughout the game. You just had to ride them, good or bad. It's going to happen. It's just, how do you come through with those victories, whether it's, you know, fighting off their pressure or you supplying pressure. So, you know, and shift after goals for or against, you know, it's very key. And I thought we, you know, reacted very well. They came back and got a power play goal, and we went right back and got our power play goal. So that happened a couple of times and just helped us change the game and keep it in our favor.
Well, you certainly had a lot of opportunities to work on the first shift after a goal because you scored eight of them. Four different two goal scorers with Rebecca Johnston, Breanne Jenner, Blair Turnbull, and Jessica Campbell scoring two for mm-hmm. you. Offensively, well, was that a surprise that eight goals go in on 19 shots, or how did you feel offensively your team played?
I thought we capitalized on every, you know, scoring chance we had. You know, the girls were hungry around the net. We really put a focus on that 3 weeks leading up to this game was, you know, in practices, you know, make sure you shoot the score. Make sure you put that thing through the back of the net. And if there are rebounds, you know, don't just sit there and hope they go in. Go put them in. And, you know, the girls did that today when they had their, yesterday when they had their chances. They capitalized and they finished. So I'm very, very proud of them.
Yeah, it was eight goals on 19 shots. That's putting your chances away, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, they outshot us a little bit, but I think most of their shots came on the power play. So, you know, it really wasn't that, you know, we took it to them quite a bit. Like I say, the shot could go in, you know, look at it either way that, it looks a little awkward, but it really wasn't that bad.
Now, when your team does get out, whether it looked as bad as it was or not, your team gets outshot like that, your goaltender has to come up huge, and no surprise that your goalie ends up being the first star of the game.
No, absolutely. The thing with Delaney is, you know, you let her see that first one, she's going to stop it. And our D and our back-checking forwards, they really did a good job getting rid of that second, third opportunity. So, she played very, very well. She made the key saves at the key times, you know, when we needed her. And that's what helped us lead us the way.
So now you go from being the hunters to being the hunted. It's the first time Calgary has won the Clarkson Cup. How do you keep the team hungry going into next year? Because we've seen that in other sports before where team wins a championship one year and a little bit of complacency sets in and you start to believe your own hype and things like that. How do you kind of keep that from happening going into next season?
Well, I'm going to let them celebrate here for the next little while and then we'll start. You know, the team's never going to be the same. That's just the terrible part of the sport. You know, you can't keep the group together. You know, life goes on with certain players. So, you know, maybe the new fresh blood will help us with that. You know, they maybe not have won yet and they want to win. And, you know, that's what kind of sparked us for this victory is, you know, the girls that have been here for 5 years that put the effort in from hardly winning any games to now winning the final game, you know, so that helped spark the girls that have kind of won a lot already. So, you know, there'll be different things we'll have to come up with. We'll have to be creative. And, you know, throughout the year, just judge it and see how it's going to what buttons we have to push and not push.
So how much contact do you get to have with the girls going into the off season now? Because they're off doing their own thing. A lot of them going to the Women's World Hockey Championships now. How much do you get to chat with them during the off season to see how things are going?
You know, we'll have to play that by ear because, like you say, they're heading to Worlds here on Friday. They're going to go start preparing. The girls, our team's really, there's not that many that stay around Calgary. We're pretty spread out around actually the whole country. So obviously, you know, there's email or phone call. We'll be in touch with them, making sure, you know, they're all, you know, like they only signed 1 year contract. So you got to get them to come back. And so hopefully the winning helps them want to, you know, come back and be a part of it again. And like you say, the repeat, well, that's just going to be something we're just going to have to focus on and get everybody on the same page again.
Now, when it comes to women's hockey and with this league right now, there's always going to be bigger picture type things. What does this mean long term? What do you think the next step is for this league? Because it gets on TV for the playoff games anyway. There are some smaller websites that are covering it, but there's still a little bit, I think, that needs to happen mainstream-wise. What do you think the next step is for this league now?
Yeah, absolutely. Just keep getting out there, keep promoting the league as best as we can, you know, especially around Calgary now. You know, people know about it. You know, you start going around the streets or the schools, people here like Calgary Inferno, they know about it now. So that's a good step. So now it's just getting them into the building. And the girls have done an amazing job, you know, in the community with Start the Spark, the mental health of the game they put on. You know, we had 2,000 people show up to that. So, you know, things are happening. It's just got to continue. Now that the Cup's around, we're going to try and get the girls, you know, to have it for a day, just like the Stanley Cup. And, you know, say if you're a teacher, take it to your school. We have an RCMP, you know, take it to her location, or take it in her car around town. Or we have a lawyer, you know, take it to her law firm. So things like that, just to keep getting it out and promoting the game now with the Cup that these girls earned.
Yeah, and you guys certainly earned it. And once again, congratulations on the 8-3 win over Montreal. Your Clarkson Cup champions are the Calgary Inferno. The coach of that team, Scott Reed. Scott, I know there's a lot of celebrating to be done, so thanks for taking some time out to talk to us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That is Scott Reed, the coach of the Calgary Inferno again. Big win for them, Clarkson Cup champions, beating the heavily favored Montreal Les Canadiens by a score of 8-3. It's, I think, an important time for that league, because Jay and I were talking about this during the break. This league can be very, very good for women's hockey, but you don't need two of these. And that, I think that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later. You don't need the Canadian Women's Hockey League and the National Women's Hockey League going head to head. This really feels like something where both leagues kind of need to come together and figure this thing out. Because if you have one league of the best women's hockey players playing each other on a nightly basis, because there's not a ton of teams right now, you get best on best every night. That's going to be something that a lot of people are going to tune into. But this competition doesn't do anyone a lick of good right now. So I think that's kind of the next step. And for the Canadian Women's Hockey League, at some point, these players probably need to get paid for it, but it's come a long way, and it's cool that the games were on Sportsnet, and a lot of the blogs that cover the NHL teams have really got on and supported the Canadian Women's Hockey League teams as well. So that's cool to see. There's growth and there's a lot of attention being paid to it, and that's good, but I think there still is a little bit left to go when it comes to the attention the Canadian Women's Hockey League is being paid. Just a few more seconds or a few more minutes here before we have to head out today. Someone texting in, what building's on fire? I work near you guys. Apparently it is at 5th Ave and 7th Street, I believe, in the Southwest. So a couple blocks away from here, still seeing emergency crews walking or driving by. So that's not terrifying at all. The Flames taking on the St. Louis Blues tonight. It is 6 o'clock warm-up. 7 o'clock is the puck drop. Said it with Darren. We're getting to the point where the amount of excitement you have for a game is based very largely on who the Flames are playing. And tonight's a good one. I always really enjoy watching the Blues because they feel like they have kind of that balance to me between being that really grinded out team and a team that can put up some goals. Jaden Schwartz only getting into 21 games this year, but he's at 16 points already. You got Tarasenko, obviously, is a delight to watch. Robbie Fabry's at 16, Troy Brower's at 14, David Backes is at 17. This team, I think the main issue for them in the playoffs has been generating offense. They've been able to do the grind it out thing, and that's worked fine, but if you can shut down Tarasenko, you can shut down this entire team. And so that's why I think it's important that you have a Robbie Fabry out there scoring a bunch. You have a Troy Brower out there scoring a bunch, and the goaltending is going to be huge. They make the move for Ryan Miller a couple years ago. He doesn't really pan out. They go out and get Jaro Halak. That didn't work. Brian Elliott's had a chance. It didn't. I don't know if it was totally his fault, but that didn't go well. This is now Jake Allen's turn. And this is a big one for him and a big one for the organization. They kind of need this guy to be the number one, because I think they felt like they had two number ones there for a while. They've made the decision that Allen's their guy. And if that doesn't work out, and I'm not saying that this year, if it doesn't work out in the playoffs, then get rid of a 26-year-old goaltender. But if it doesn't pan out this year, then that's a big eyebrow raised for a team that has been so good for so long and done nothing in the playoffs. it's almost like the Blues of the early 2000s with Pronger and McInnes and Tkachuk and all of those guys, and they were very good, but they weren't Colorado. They weren't Dallas. They weren't Detroit. There were so many other good teams in the West that they kind of got left behind, and it was just bad timing on their part, and it kind of feels like they're there again. Very good teams, but they're not Chicago. They're not LA. They're barely Anaheim. This is going to be a big one for them, but we look at postseason success, and they don't have a lot of it, and we think, ah, well, prove it to me when you get to the playoffs. And you kind of forget, this is a really good hockey team, and they're going to bring it to the Flames tonight. It is warm-up tonight at 6. Puck drop is at 7. All of it on Rogers Calgary Flames hockey. That's it for the show today. Thank you to Darren Haynes for stopping by. Thank you to the Calgary Inferno for setting up that Scott Reed interview. And again, congratulations to them on their Clarkson Cup win. I got to go. Enjoy the game tonight. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Get the fuck out of here.